pleasure to be with you all in person. I want to focus the bulk of my argument today, of course, pending any questions your honors may have, on the jury instruction issue. And I want to specifically identify the error that we argue was sort of permeated the jury instruction on our client's Eighth Amendment sexual assault claim, and also explain why we believe the error was both plain and prejudicial to Mr. De Jesus. As your honors know, our client's claim against Sergeant Willie Lewis was in the nature of an Eighth Amendment sexual assault claim, and specifically, and I apologize in advance for the vivid language given the nature of the case, our client alleges that Sergeant Lewis essentially sexually assaulted him in prison by digitally penetrating his anus. Mr. De Jesus was initially appointed counsel. His counsel withdrew before trial, and Mr. De Jesus proceeded to trial pro se and did his best to try his own case.
On the jury instruction issue, just because that's where you say you want to focus.
Yes.
And I understand that. Is there ever a way for law enforcement or corrections personnel to digitally penetrate somebody's anus for law enforcement purposes?
Yes, I believe so. In the Sconiers case on which we rely, this court's decision last year, I think recognizes that there are circumstances when that can be. Yes, Your Honor.
If that's the case, then isn't it for the jury then to decide whether it is constitutionally excessive, meaning the motive was not for legitimate law enforcement purposes, but instead was to cause harm or pain or was itself problematic, again, there wasn't legitimate purposes for doing so. The manner in which it was done, the circumstances under which it was done, would indicate whether it is legitimate law enforcement or instead is something far, far different. And if that's the case, then why is this jury instruction incorrect, which asked the jury to decide, is this malicious and sadistic, which is the constitutional threshold, by looking at these factors, or is it instead a legitimate purpose, if this can be done in a legitimate way?
I think I understand the question, and I appreciate it. I'll answer it in summary fashion, and then I'm happy to go through the jury instructions in more detail. But I think in summary, what our argument would be is that Sconiers carves out a different category for these sexual assault claims and prescribes, I think, a slightly different order of operations. I think under Sconiers, a truly correct jury instruction would have said, for example, as you may know, Your Honor, that the first element that Mr. De Jesus was required to prove under the jury instruction, let me just make sure I have it in front of me.
Was if it happened.
If he was digitally penetrated.
Right. In other words, did it in fact happen?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And then
because they had alleged it didn't in fact happen, or the other side.
Exactly right. And then the second element that he was required to prove, and I think this goes to Your Honor's point.
Was it excessive?
Correct. Was it excessive force? And then it refers to a sort of elaboration on the second page of the written jury instructions that elaborates all the relevant.
I guess what I'm asking is this, to fast forward a little bit, isn't that element and the elements that are the factors that a jury was to consider go to distinguishing between, as Sconiers laid out, I think, beautifully and well, that there is legitimate conduct and there is absolutely illegitimate conduct, and the gateway between them is malice and sadism, and is there legitimate law enforcement purposes or penological purposes or not? The very things that the jury instruction seems to be trying to elicit.
I think your point is well taken, but I think the jury is led astray unless they're advised that under Sconiers, and obviously there's a timing issue here in the sense that the jury instruction was issued before Sconiers, but we're assessing plain error at the time today with Sconiers having been issued. I think the jury is led astray unless they're advised that under Sconiers, a sexual assault is basically always excessive force. Right, and they can be confused in looking at this jury instruction.
But I guess the question is, there's no doubt that a sexual assault is what you say. But the question is this a sexual assault? I mean, it's not clear that it's a sexual assault until the jury says this is a sexual assault.
Correct.
Right?
And absolutely.
Do you agree with that?
I agree with you. And in fact, Your Honor, that goes to, I think, one of the ways that this jury instruction, I think, is erroneous. Because if there had been a question or even a fragmented set of questions that asked the jury to find, is this a sexual assault? Right, then that would be basically dispositive of the issue, and that would have been a correct jury instruction.
Isn't that, though, what the excessive force element and the factors that are considered are trying to drive at, is that very question, which is, we're trying to, again, I look at it like a gateway. So this happened. First of all, did it happen? Yes, it happened. Second question, if it happened, is this a legitimate use of force for a penological goal, or is this something very, very different? And how do you consider that? What was the motive? How did it happen? what's the element of force that was done? Because obviously, one done for a medical purpose is very different than one done for a sadistic purpose. All of those things. Well, I guess, how is that the jury instruction wrong to identify those as factors for the jury to consider to make the ultimate decision on excessiveness?
I suppose, Your Honor, that our argument would be, again, that until Sconiers, this court had not held that sexual assault was categorically per se excessive force, right? I think that was a novel holding of Sconiers. And if you look at the jury instruction in this case, particularly what's written on the second page, the elaboration of what excessive force means, I think there are certain phrases in there that are basically in tension with the holdings of Sconiers, and particularly when the jury is instructed as to that lengthy paragraph of considerations and you put it side by side with Sconiers, I think the jury can be misled to stray from the holding of Sconiers. And if I may just point out a couple of examples. As you know, in the second page of the written jury instruction, which was read to the jury, it says you should consider the amount of force used in relationship to the need presented, right? And Sconiers holds that sexual assault has no legitimate penological purpose.
Well, that's right, but to determine whether if it's a sexual assault, it has no purpose. But to determine whether it's a sexual assault, you need to meet the constitutional threshold for malice and sadism, the excessiveness. And to determine that, isn't the amount of force, doesn't Sconiers specifically say the amount of force, it gives it as example. One, you wouldn't use a significant amount of force if it was done for medical purposes, but you absolutely would if you're trying to, in a malicious way, hurt someone or embarrass or you know, degrade them.
I think the problem is that the way the jury instruction is written, and again, particularly the second page, there's just a high risk of confusion. I agree with you that a jury could apply the correct Sconiers analysis with this jury instruction, but it's just exceedingly difficult.
Didn't we say in Sconiers that if it's not for a legitimate penological purpose, such as an appropriate search or a medical examination, and if it is then therefore done only for either the personal gratification of the official or to maliciously and sadistically harass the individual, that then it's a sexual assault, and that a digital penetration of the anus for a sexual assault reason is always going to be serious improper behavior, regardless of how much force is used to conduct it, because there's no legitimate purpose. If by definition we have established that there's no legitimate purpose and it was done only to humiliate the individual or to gratify the official, then by definition it's a problem. I mean, haven't we already said that?
Yes, and I think I appreciate the question because I think it helps answer Judge Luck's question, at least from our point of view, which is, and I want to be a little bit more specific if I may, if it's helpful to answer the question, which is that I think the jury instruction could have, should have read, number one, whether the digital penetration happened, and two, whether the digital penetration was, let's say, to use the reasoning of Sconiers, was for purposes of sexual gratification or humiliation. I think that jury instruction would get at what the reasoning and holding of Sconiers is and basically dispose of the issue appropriately, I think, in a way that Judge Luck's question gets at.
So let me ask you this. I mean, I'm going to tell you, I think the jury instruction could have been better. What I'm not sure of is whether it rises to the level of plain error. So if you could maybe home in on that for me, that would be very helpful.
Sure. I think in our briefs, and I appreciate the question because I want to elaborate on what we argued in our briefs, and particularly on the issue of prejudice. Of course, generally, to establish plain error, you need to show not only that there was an error that was plain, let's stipulate for the sake of my answer to your question, Judge Rosenbaum, that it was, and then you need to show prejudice. And I think we and Appellees have a slightly different understanding of whether there was prejudice in this case and how the prejudice analysis applies. There are many cases from this circuit and the former Fifth Circuit that we've cited in our briefs, or some of which we cited in our briefs. For example, the Pate versus Seaboard Railroad case, which, and I'm just going to quote from it, where a jury is given an erroneous charge, which will mislead the jury or leave the jury to speculate as to an essential point of law, the error is sufficiently fundamental to warrant a new trial despite a party's failure to state a proper objection. I think there's a line of cases in this circuit in the form.
Was the excessiveness element really what was thought about at trial? It seems to me that this was a trial about did it happen, not how it happened. And the defense was tailored at, he's lying, this never happened, and he says, no, this did happen, and the jury seems to resolve that fact against your client. So I guess how can the prejudice, when we say, does it substantially affect something, and it's your burden to show, how can you show not just that it may have, but that it actually happened, or there was a substantial likelihood of it having been affected, where this case doesn't seem to have been litigated on that fact?
Well, unless I'm misremembering, Your Honor, what the record reflects is that the jury returned a general verdict, right? And it didn't make a specific finding about whether the digital penetration happened or not, although I understand that to have been the defense's defense at trial. The reason I was citing to the Pate case, among others, and I won't belabor the point by giving you a string citation, but it's that an error that is plain, that so permeates a jury instruction and misleads the jury in the wrong analysis, is prejudicial almost without having to inquire as to the specifics of what the jury would have or would not have done given a correct jury instruction, especially in this case where the jury returned a general verdict. I understand that it's our burden to show plain error, but it's truly impossible to know what the jury was thinking. They did not ask any questions of the district court. They did not return any specific findings. They returned only a general verdict. And they were proceeding with a jury instruction that was permeated by plain error because of its departure from Sconeers. And I see that my time is up, so.
You've reserved some time for rebuttal, and we'll look forward to hearing from you then.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And may it please the court, my name is Jeanette Lugo, and along with me is John Wiederhold, seated at counsel's table, and we represent the appellees, Willie J. Lewis and Dean Kastner. Today we are asking that this court affirm the district court's judgment below. And just getting right to the first issue that appellant has brought up, and which really seems to be the crux of the issues in the brief, is the jury instruction. It is our position that the jury's instruction was not plainly erroneous and did not misstate the law so as to lead to an incorrect verdict. Appellant relies heavily on Sconeers and for the position that sexual assault is per se excessive, sadistic, and malicious. This court did not step away from what's a core judicial inquiry, which is the nature of force that's applied.
We pretty much did say that if there's a digital penetration of the anus that is not for a legitimate purpose, but is rather for the humiliation of the prisoner or the gratification of the official, then that constitutes, quote, serious misconduct. I mean, didn't we say that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so the question really for the jury is whether the jury believes that the official here digitally penetrated Mr. De Jesus's anus for the purpose of humiliating him or sexual gratification, or whether he did not, in fact, engage in that action. I mean, that's really what the question for the jury was with respect to this issue. Would you agree?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree that was the question, and it really does go to the facts that this originally started out as a pat-down search.
Okay, and so if the jury determined that it didn't believe Mr. De Jesus and it believed your client, then there's no sexual assault, and we don't get to Sconeers, right?
Correct.
But if the jury concluded that it did believe that there was a sexual assault that occurred, and by that I mean for humiliating the prisoner or for gratification of the official, okay, and not a legitimate penological purpose, then the next question, then it should automatically be under Sconeers and what we said about at least this kind of sexual assault, it should automatically constitute excessive force. That's basically what we said in Sconeers with respect to this particular activity. And so then the question becomes, is that what the instruction conveyed? I'm not sure the instruction did convey that. I think, and in fairness to the district court, it did not have the benefit of Sconeers, so it wouldn't have known to do this. But, you know, in retrospect, the question then would have become for the jury, well, I mean, then the instruction would have been, well, if you find that it was done for no legitimate penological purpose and was done for the humiliation of the prisoner or the sexual gratification or the gratification of the official, then you must find excessive force. But instead, it sort of left open this notion that there might be a possibility that even if you find that the act occurred, it might not rise to the level of excessive force because you have to consider, you know, how hard he did it or whatever. And that's not correct under Sconiers. So it seems like since the instructions would have allowed the jury to return a verdict for your client, even if they found a sexual assault had occurred, and I don't want to keep defining it, you know what I mean. Isn't that a problem? I guess let me ask you to start from this. Do you disagree with any of the premises that I have set forth up to here? That is, that if the jury concluded that a sexual assault had occurred, that it still could have found your client not liable under the instructions. Do you disagree with that?
And to your question, Your Honor, so you're asking if my client could have still not been found liable even if a sexual assault had occurred.
Right, under these instructions.
I do not think that at that point the client could have not been found liable because we're talking under the framework of Sconiers.
But I'm asking under these instructions.
Under
because,
these instructions.
Because, of course, you know, the district court didn't have the benefit of Sconiers and neither did the jury. So just looking at these instructions, would it have been possible for a jury to conclude that a sexual assault occurred and also return a verdict in favor of your client because it concluded that even though it was a sexual assault in the grand scheme of things, you know, having a finger put in the anus is not, you know, malicious and sadistic.
I think that they still could have found my client liable at that point under these instructions.
Have, I guess the question is, could they have found him not liable under the instructions?
I would say they could have... So you're asking, Your Honor, if they could have found him not liable under right. these instructions.
Right, even though they found that a sexual assault had occurred. Because they just found, you know, this isn't that serious. He didn't show a lot of force was used. And it's possible to commit, you know, a digital penetration of the anus in a way that's, even though not for a legitimate penological purpose and even though a sexual assault, it's possible to do it without excessive force.
I think the jury instructions, though, did allow for the jury to consider, even if it wasn't extensive, the injury, regardless of the significance of it, it could still be malicious or sadistic. And that was part of the jury instruction.
So, but my question is, would it be possible for the jury to have found your client not liable, even though it found a sexual assault, under these instructions? And if your answer is yes, then my question is how?
No, I think that if they were to have found that a sexual assault occurred and looking at the factors to consider, even if the jury were to find that the extent to which the injury here occurred or whether it be not as significant, if it was still a sexual assault, I still think that they would have found otherwise that it was excessive.
How would they do that under these instructions? What part of these instructions would you point to that would require a jury upon finding sexual assault to return a verdict in favor of Mr. DeJesus?
I would point, Your Honor, to, again, the eighth page of the jury instructions, which says, of course, officers may not maliciously or sadistically use force to cause harm, regardless of the significance of the injury to the prisoner.
Okay, but let me ask you, what if they found that it didn't rise to the level of malicious or sadistic? I mean, some people have in mind a thought of what sadistic and malicious means that maybe it doesn't rise to. I mean, is it possible? Maybe it's not possible. I'm just really asking, I'm curious as to what your position is on this. Because I will tell you, as I told your friend over here, that, you know, I think that the instructions could have been written better, but in fairness to the district court, I understand why they were written this way, because that's what the law was at the time. So I don't fault the district court at all. Nevertheless, having said that, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about whether it's plain error or not. I think it's not great, but, you know, whether it rises to plain error, that's what I'm trying to establish in my own mind.
And I think the purpose of having malicious and sadistic in the instruction itself allows for this differentiation between the types of force that exist. And the jury instruction does talk about not every push or shove actually rises to a certain level of force.
Yes, but we've said in Sconeers that every digital penetration for the purposes of a sexual assault does rise to that level, right? I mean, we've said that.
Isn't that the issue, though? It's the for the purposes. So as I understand it, so the questions that you were asked were if the jury determined a sexual assault. But that's actually not how this case was litigated, right?
Correct.
The way this was litigated is question one was, did the insertion happen? In other words, as a matter of fact, did it happen? And then only if that happened, the jury's then asked, was that insertion excessive as defined Correct. Under the Constitution, right?
Correct.
And to do that, let's look to Sconeers, because Sconeers actually tells us. So I'm looking at page 1266, and it says, the Eighth Amendment prohibits force that offends contemporary standards of decency, regardless of whether significant injury is evident, though the extent of injury may shed light on the amount of force applied or whether the use of force could plausibly have been thought necessary. And so what the jury is asked in the second thing is the question of, is this legitimate? In other words, is this the type of search that is allowed? Or is this, to use the exact phraseology of Sconeers that Judge Rosenbaum has mentioned, which is done for the purpose of humiliating either the prisoner or for the sexual gratification of the corrections official. And the only way for the jury to determine that is to consider a bunch of different factors, right?
Correct.
Does Sconeers lay out exactly that pattern of what factors are to consider or not? Does it?
Does it actually lay out the factors for a jury to consider?
How to determine legitimate searches from those that are clearly not legitimate?
I think that it does, and the fact that if it's not for a medical purpose or to further some penological interest of the institution, then it's going to be for some other purpose, and we're measuring then whether that is malicious and in fact sadistic.
Is that a jury question?
Whether it's malicious and sadistic, I don't believe that necessarily has to be a jury question. Well, it is a jury question, but not necessarily laid out as an element of the instruction. I think in a way rhetorical kind of function.
Wasn't though excessiveness defined, though, as that which is malicious and sadistic?
Yes.
In other words, done for a non-legitimate purpose.
Yes, and I think sadistic and malicious intent goes toward that determination of whether it is, in fact, excessive.
But didn't we say in Sconeers that with respect to the subjective element under the Eighth Amendment, that digital penetration without legitimate penological purpose is necessarily sadistically and maliciously applied? And on the objective element, didn't we say that a guard who sadistically, maliciously forces his finger into an inmate's anus, as Sconeers accuses Lockhart of doing, plainly commits, quote, severe sexual abuse of a prisoner and violates the Eighth Amendment?
Yes, that was stated, and I also think what's important to point out in that opinion was that if Sconeers could prove to a reasonable jury satisfaction that Lockhart sadistically and maliciously forced his finger into Sconeers' anus, Lockhart's actions violate the Eighth Amendment because they can constitute severe sexual abuse of a prisoner. And so that actual phrase, sadistic and malicious, the jury is considering it, however, we are not adding that as an additional element. Again, I was saying this in many ways is a rhetorical kind of function, that it really allows the jury to understand what the nature of the force is, how inherently cruel it is. And so the jury is able to decipher, if they even reach the question of whether it's beyond that a sexual assault occurred, and now we're talking about we're not even talking about force anymore. It's occurred.
Can I just get your help here? I mean, who knew, you know, that we would have this series of cases about what instructions juries should be given about the digital penetration of prisoners? I mean, I think we can all start from the point, this is a question. A sexual assault, assuming it was a sexual assault, cannot serve a legitimate penological purpose. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
Okay, thank you. So then, the trial counsel never made the argument, this whatever happened here was for a medical purpose or, you know, in the course of a legitimate search. Your defense was merely it didn't happen.
Correct.
And so to me, it seems like we could avoid all of this and add some clarity if the instruction was, look, once you've decided a sexual assault took place, we're not going to require you to decide, okay, well, how bad was he injured? I mean, once you decide a sexual assault has taken place, that serves no penological purpose, and you know that case goes down one track. Doesn't that sound right to you?
That does sound correct, Your Honor,
okay.
And right, that at the point it is a sexual assault, it serves no purpose. At that point, that would further the penological interest.
Okay, here. And so, you know, when you've got a jury back there saying, well, you know, this, you know, inmate was digitally penetrated, but it really didn't hurt him that bad. I mean, that's not where we want to go.
That's not. And the Prison Litigation Reform Act certainly stepped away from that when it was amended in 2013, that there doesn't have to be a prior showing of physical injury. Mental and emotional injury is enough in the context of sexual assault.
You know, my goal for this case is to you know, give some clear guidance going forward on these jury instructions. And it sounds like you might be good with that because you won't be back here arguing this kind of case again, right?
Well, Your Honor, I do think as the instructions were laid out, were not plainly erroneous, and I think
I
that really goes
the
under the prejudicial analysis based on the evidence.
But, it looks like to me the jury could have found, that the act happened, but it really, wasn't cruel and unusual punishment. And so I think we just need to clean that up going forward, don't you?
Well, it would prevent us from arguing here today, but I do think
much
that
as you've enjoyed it.
The jury,
right,
did not get to reach certain questions because they found that it did not in fact occur. So I do think that is critical here.
I get that. Okay.
So you would be okay with us finding it was error as long as we didn't find it was plain error?
I wouldn't say that it was, Your Honor. I, based on the evidence that came in that would support the verdict that the jury came back with, there was no evidence that it had occurred. There was conflicting testimony, of course.
Right, but I'm just saying for the jury instruction itself.
That I would have no problem with it being found in error as long as...
We're talking about, guidance for future cases. If it's a sexual assault, it doesn't serve a penological purpose. Right.
That's the law, that it doesn't serve a penological purpose. But I don't think under the facts of this case that the jury instruction was plainly erroneous.
I've got that. I hear you on that.
I am out of time unless the court has any additional questions.
No, thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel, but as you're putting on the little microphone, I don't know what else to call it.
I can think of a couple of things.
Really?
Yeah.
How does a jury determine between or if something is a sexual assault or not? What factors must a jury consider to determine it? Because everyone agrees in this room that if a sexual assault happens, it does not matter the extent of injuries there. And the jury instruction says injuries can be nominal. It says if it's malicious and sadistic, it doesn't matter how much it is. Everyone agrees on that principle. How does a jury determine, though, between this kind of legit search and this kind of thing, which is clearly not legitimate?
So,
what do we tell a jury?
I can answer more broadly, but I'm going to focus on digital penetration cases, since that's what Schoeners is dealing with and that's what we're dealing with. Obviously, sexual assault can mean any number of other types of conduct.
Sure.
I think in a digital penetration case, it's one, did the digital penetration occur? And two, was it for purposes of humiliation or sexual gratification? I think you said so yourself earlier, Your Honor.
Let's say it started as a legitimate search, but turned into something that clearly was done for purposes of humiliation or the sexual gratification. Does the amount of force or the way it was done affect that analysis?
I would say no. I mean, I would say that...
Doesn't Schoeners explicitly state that, at least objectively, to determine whether something's a sexual assault or not for Eighth Amendment purposes, the way it was done does kind of matter, right?
I hate to be so vivid because I can't help it in answering your question.
Understanding
the hypothetical, it's that an inmate is digitally penetrated for a legitimate, whether it's search or medical or God knows what purpose. That purpose ends, and the digital penetration continues for purposes of humiliation or sexual gratification. That's an Eighth Amendment violation, period. Right, the second the legitimate purpose ends. So I guess that would be my answer.
I guess my question is, in defining that line, because this case is less an issue for the reasons that Judge Martin said, because this really is whether it happened or not. But in cases where it's a close call, because that's really what we're writing for, right, is the close cases. What factors is a jury to consider? Because it seems to be more than just, is it legitimate, penological, or not. That sort of begs the question. What is legitimate? What makes something legitimate? And what makes it for humiliation or for purposes of sexual gratification?
Well, that's tough, and I haven't seen it to date until you asked the question, Your Honor, as essential to our argument to sort of elaborate on what it means to do it for sexual gratification or for purposes of humiliation. That strikes me as a jury question, right?
Let me ask you this then. I mean, it may be hard to differentiate the factors to consider beyond what have already been differentiated with respect to sexual assault in general, maybe, right? But we've already said in Schoeners that a digital penetration that is not for a legitimate penological purpose is a sexual assault, and that is excessive force, right? Haven't we already said that? Okay, so it strikes me as maybe that's, at the very least, that would be a special category where it would always be excessive force based on Schoeners. Is that what your argument is?
Yes, and I wouldn't presume to start drafting new pattern jury instructions now, but I think that would be a salutary solution to the problem, to explain to the jury whether, even on the second page of this jury instruction, as counsel said, page 8 of docket entry 43, at least a sentence that explains that in this category of cases, we're not looking at extent of force, we're not looking at extent of injury. This is a categorical Eighth Amendment violation when it's the jury so find that it's for a sexual gratification or humiliation purpose.
I recognize it maybe isn't your concern, but I understand Judge Luck's concern also, which is, I mean, it would be kind of strange to just have a special jury instruction in digital penetration cases as opposed to all sexual assault cases.
I see.
It's not that we can't do it. Of course we can, but it would be unusual to do that. And so I think that's where he's coming from in asking you whether you have some other suggestion. But on the spur of the moment, it's the kind of thing I think it probably takes some considered judgment and thought if one can even come up with something. But
I think I understand the two sets of questions better now, and I'm afraid I don't have a good answer.
Well, ask you this. If in determining that line, because we agree that the jury needs to determine that line, where did the jury instruction go wrong in the general case, in the general sexual assault case? Where did the jury instruction go wrong when it said, in determining that line, whether it's legitimate or not, consider motive, consider manner, consider force used, consider these other things. But if it's done maliciously and sadistically, no matter how much injury or force was done, that is never legitimate, right?
Yes, I think if I'm understanding your question, and correct me if I'm wrong, in a non-digital penetration case where the plaintiff alleges another type of sexual abuse, I guess my answer today would be that the general excessive force jury instruction would be appropriate. I can't visualize what that other type of abuse would be. I can't give you a hypothetical. In the digital penetration case under Sconiers, I think the analysis has to proceed differently. Was there a digital penetration and what was the purpose? And yes, that's a tough question, and in a hypothetical case, it can be hard for the jury to determine motive, but that's already part of the Eighth Amendment analysis. I think the proper, you know, order of operations in a digital penetration sexual assault case is, did it take place and was it for one of these improper purposes, gratification or humiliation? And that's it as far as the violation is concerned. Okay, I'm out of time, so of course we would ask that this court vacate the judgment and remand for a new trial. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate your help to the court and representing Mr. De Jesus.
My pleasure.